like this. M-E-K-O-N. 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 M-E-K-O-N.
Welcome, listener, to episode 11 of the Antigen Internet Radio Show. My name is Jason, and I'll be awkwardly jamming the ship full of bombs into the banks of your ear canal for the next hour, with a show packed full of amateur political satire and music selected because of some spurious link to the subject matter. I thought we'd have a seaside special tonight to cheer everyone up, with End of the Pier entertainment from my favourite seaside town. Not Southend-on-Sea, that would be ridiculous. Nope, we're going to feature music from liberal cosmopolitan Brighton on the sunny south coast. We kicked off the show with Mekon and Roxanne Shanté with What's Going On, originally released in 2000. That was a remix from 2017. Mekon is John Gosling, born in Brighton, formerly of Zoskia and Psychic TV, and Roxanne Shanté, who should need no introduction, but if she does, there's a new Netflix documentary about her, which came out last month. Tonight, we're celebrating 1 year of what started as a podcast going out to 160 people on Mixcloud, and is now a proper radio show going out to 80 people on Southend's premier internet-only radio station. The show was originally conceived as a lockdown project to give me something to do at the weekends in the absence of live gigs, but it rapidly transformed into a political diary, tracking the UK government's response to the coronavirus pandemic. So if we survive, we can listen back and laugh at the catalogue of calamity that led to the largest annual peacetime death toll in the UK since the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918. But it hasn't all been doom and gloom over the last year. For some of you listeners out there, the coronavirus crisis has brought unexpected opportunities to enhance your quality of life with massive piles of free cash by turning your dog food business into a supplier of PPE, proving there's always a silver lining. In fact, John F. Kennedy once famously said, in a speech in Indianapolis in 1959, "The Chinese use two brushstrokes to write the word crisis. One brushstroke stands for danger, the other for opportunity." This speech led to the widely popular misunderstanding of the etymology of Wei Qi, the Chinese word for crisis, that appears to lie at the heart of our government's response to the pandemic. There is danger, magnified by the abject failure of the £37 billion test and trace programme, a decade of NHS underfunding, and an approach to risk management modelled on Larry Vaughan, the mayor of Amity Island, in Jaws. But there's also opportunity. An opportunity for the biggest transfer of public money into private hands in living memory. This is the international debt.
Kids!
Stars, The International Debt, who live in Brighton, with Competitive Living from their new EP due out sometime in May. Their inclusion on tonight's playlist conveniently enables me to segue into talking about the UK's national debt. The Institute of Government estimates that coronavirus public health measures will add £339 billion to public sector net borrowing, a significant chunk of which has been spent on our world-beating test-and-trace system, managed by former TalkTalk CEO, Baroness, and Conservative Life peer, Dido Harding, whose tenure at TalkTalk lost some 95,000 customers and £60 million, following a massive data breach. If you've had COVID-19, or met someone with COVID-19, or been in the same pub as someone with COVID-19, you'll be reassured to know that she's in charge of your data now. Even Conservative MPs have started to publicly voice unease at the scale of Dido Harding's test-and-trace spending spree, accusing the government of using the taxpayer as an ATM after it was revealed that the programme currently employs 2,300 management consultants on an average pay of £7,000 a day. However, Dido Harding told the Public Accounts Committee that this was appropriate and they've done some very important work. Ironically, we'll never find out what this important work is, or how they were selected, or who Dido Harding met when she went on her £37 billion recruitment drive with our cash, as the government has rejected a Freedom of Information request on the grounds that it would, quote, exceed the appropriate cost limit to respond. If this makes you angry, you can complain about her conduct in public office to the government's anti-corruption champion John Penrose, MP for Weston-super-Mare. You should get a quick response, as he's Dido Harding's husband. £37 billion on test and trace might seem like a lot of money, but 22 million tests have been carried out, so that's a fairly modest £1,681.81 per test, not much more than a grand and a half for a swab up your nostril. And if you're now fuming that £1,600 is more than you spend sticking stuff up your nose in a month, you, my shit-munching friend, obviously don't understand capitalism. You have to wait for the trickle-down effect. That's when a test-and-trace consultant on £7,000 a day pays you £5 to clean the bird shit off his new Mercedes. Or when the government offers you a 1% pay rise for working in frontline NHS services for a year without adequate PPE. Fuck it, I don't pretend to be an economist. If you want to understand the trickle-down effect, watch Human Centipede.
I'm exhausting myself. Who dares wins? Dan dares. He got it wrong. His rocket got bombed. The Mekong got a big head. Wears stay pressed waffle trousers. Tram lines in his hair. A John Partridge shooter's Mac. Fogg Lyland Scott, the halves, they always get it wrong.
We don't, we have not.
I got a barbed wire brain on a cheap flight to self-destruction with an overnight stay at. Ah, fuck, I can't function. I'm not a mod, I go. I'm not a mod, I go. And you can stick this job right up your arse. What's it like sticking probes into boxes of dead chicken until 8 o'clock at night? What's it like knowing you're just an average musician and this is your shine life? What's it like putting your cock inside another drunk woman? I'm like, alright. What's it like? What's it like? What's it like? What's it like? Me to shag her. I ain't gonna shag her. Fuck her. I'm doing the can-can man. I'm a summer boy. I wear deck shoes with no socks. I feel wrong, I'm twisted. I'm a twat in a box with no lid on top and the spring's fucked. I hit women
I'm a bird beater. I guard my pathetic set of values like a deluded social phobe with no friends and a chronic obsession with becoming a beef eater. What's it like sticking probes into boxes of dead chicken until 8 o'clock at night? What's it like knowing you're just an average musician and this is your shy life? What's it like putting your cock inside another drunk woman? I'm like, alright. What's it like? 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 I stick my fingers up, well look at me. I do the pogo, it's in the city. I stick my fingers up, well look at me. I do the pogo, it's in the city. What's it like? What's it like? What's it like? What's it like? Oh, what's it like? Oh, what's it like? What's it like? Oh, what's it like?
Sleaford Mods with the Mekon, the title track from their 2007 album. They're not from Brighton, but the Mekon song I played earlier reminded me of how much I like the track, so there you have it. Some critics of the £37 billion test and trace programme, or Operation Moonshot, as Matt Hancock dubbed it in the Commons in September, with a straight face to widespread laughter. Some critics are worried that the general public might have trouble comprehending the vastness of £37 billion. Probably with good reason. 20% of people in the UK leave school without a maths GCSE or any other qualifications, even though we're the sixth richest country in the world. That means a fifth of you out there, that's 20% expressed as a fraction, a fifth of you may not understand 11 numbers in a row, especially as they won't fit on a calculator. So some of these critics of the government have devised ingenious new ways of illustrating the enormity of the government's reckless squandering of taxpayers' hard-earned cash. Stroud Labour Party helpfully posted a photo of a large stone on Twitter with the caption, "Here's a photo of Hetty Pegler's Tump. It's a Neolithic long barrow near Ewley, older than Stonehenge. If Dido Harding started burning £10,000 a day when this was being built, she still wouldn't have burnt the £22 billion spent on track and trace. She'd have another 1,000 years to go." And that is when the cost of test and trace looked like it was only going to be a modest £22 billion. Anyway, that really helped me visualise the scale of the massive amount of money spent on Project Moonshot Test and Trace. But it might not work for everyone. If the image of Dido Harding burning £20 notes on a Neolithic long barrow doesn't help you, perhaps because you also left school without a GCSE in history, maybe it would help to visualise £37 billion using more familiar imagery from modern day-to-day life. Imagine Matt Hancock, Minister in charge of Project Moonshot, who spent £43,000 of taxpayers' money on takeaway food for himself and his staff in 1 month in April 2020, according to a Freedom of Information request made by the Taxpayers' Alliance and the Daily Mail. £37 billion would enable Matt Hancock to feed himself and his staff on takeaway food from the fashionable Filipino-inspired restaurant Bong Bong's Manila Canteen for the next 71,705 years. In contrast, if you're an average British person, spending a mere £55 a month on takeaway food, because you have to pay for your food with your own money, you could keep yourself in takeaway food for a lot longer, 67 million years. So if Dido Harding ordered a lamb korma during the Cretaceous Paleogene extinction event that wiped out the dinosaurs, and ordered 2 meals a month for the next 67 million years, she would still be left with enough change from the test and trace budget to buy herself a couple of onion bhajis and a bottle of Coke. Now you might think it's stupid comparing Matt Hancock's Project Moonshot to Dido Harding trying to call Deliveroo for a curry in the Cretaceous period. For a more sensible comparison, the cost of sending a robot armed with a camera to another planet to send shots of Mars back to Earth was £2.7 billion, meaning NASA could have built 13 state-of-the-art robots and the spacecraft to launch them out of the Earth's atmosphere and the computer systems to run the telemetry to guide each of them 293 million miles through space to land them on the surface of another planet in our solar system, and then operate the robot remotely for at least 2 years of prime mission operations, with all staffing costs included. 13 of these for less than the estimated cost of the UK test and trace system, which doesn't work.
The last guy, the last guy, the last guy, the last guy.
Venus, Uranus,
Earth,
that's right, but the moon is a moon.
Venus.
That was Petalux with Night Sky from the STEMEP, which holds the distinction of being the first music submitted to this show in the hope of airplay to our 80 listeners. Most people we've played in the past appear at best fashionably indifferent, and some seem actually embarrassed by their inclusion. But Emma sent me that link of her own free will, and she's based in Southend too, which means she's probably unaware of the comments I've made about Southenders in previous shows, but nonetheless, I take her track submission as implicit endorsement of those comments. Let's have some news. Last week, probably the world's least surprising exclusive, Jennifer R. Curry revealed to The Mirror details of a 4-year affair with serial philanderer, liar, and Prime Minister of the UK, Boris Johnson. Or Alexander the Great, as she secretly codenamed him on her phone. This explained a lot, not least why he always looks so dishevelled, like a randy Carry On film character who's been hiding in a wardrobe. The response from Twitter was disappointing and leaned heavily on rudimentary misdirection comedy. For example, yes, I shagged a brainless blonde bimbo, admits Jennifer R. Curry. And who are you going to believe, the fake blonde with the big tits or Jennifer R. Curry? Stand-up Craig Deeley also went for classic misdirection, but with a twist, tweeting, Jennifer R. Curry admits to an affair with Boris Johnson that they kept secret for 4 years. When asked how she pulled it off, she replied, I just closed my eyes and used another mitt. A joke that misdirects the reader into thinking he's referring to the complex web of deception required to keep a 4-year affair from his wife and children while employed as the Mayor of London. And the punchline reveals that he was actually referring to the act of manually stimulating Boris Johnson's penis before the then Mayor of London returned home to his wife and kids. Jennifer R. Curry also received £126,000 of taxpayers' money, including a £100,000 government grant, and she was the beneficiary of 3 taxpayer-funded trade missions. £126,000 may seem like a lot of money to you, but she did have to sleep with Boris Johnson every 2 weeks for 4 years. And it's peanuts, really, compared to the £37 billion spunk by Boris Johnson after dry-humping the taxpayer over test and trace. To put it in perspective, if you've been failed by the British educational system, with £37 billion of public money making a huge bulge in your trousers, you could give Jennifer R. Curry's company enough grant and sponsorship money to take her on a trade mission, back in time, 1.2 million years, to the Paleolithic period, when humans were arguably even stupider than they are now. And you could pay her to service you with a prehistoric oven mitt for the next 1,274,000 years, and you'd still have enough change to order a pizza to eat in her flat in Shoreditch before returning home to lie to your wife and children.
I creep out after dark and ride around, fade in, fade out on the underground alleyway. A trash heap, leaf blow, lights on at home, not alone. A room blowing under ultraviolet light. A noise that you hear but can't see in the night. I sit up and wait for the city to breathe. The people, the rain, and it all makes a scene. I'm balanced on the back of a beast. Let's sleep in. Spine, high-rise teeth, it's breathing. Play cool, calm down, man, it's sleeping. Play cool, calm down, man, keep dreaming.
The streetlights on the satellites, we share the same curse, we stay on.
Jim Jarvis with his debut solo single Satellites, which was released on cassette and via all digital platforms on the 2nd of April. Kim's probably better known to listeners as one third of Bury St Edmunds expats Gaff Tape Sandy, who are now based in Brighton, one of two great adhesive-themed power pop bands on Antigen Records back in 2018, before they abandoned us in favour of a career in the music business with Alcapop Records. Satellites is the first release from new Brighton-based record label Bladderhead Records, set up by Gaff Tape Sandy drummer Robin Francis. Check him out on the socials. Now, time for a roundup of other news. Friend of the show, Robert Jenrick MP, was also back in the news. Having successfully pushed for statues to be afforded more protection than women, he's now being dispatched by Boris to tackle an even bigger threat to communities than woke-worthies worrying our monuments. Jenrick has been tasked to intervene and appoint unelected commissioners to take over Liverpool City Council because of alleged corruption. And not the legal kind, like Oily Dave phoning his mate Rishi to lobby for a government grant for Greensill Capital to stop the company going bust, thereby jeopardising his £60 million shareholding. The bad kind, the kind of corruption that wasn't made lawful by the emergency introduction of the Coronavirus Act of 2020. Now, if you're familiar with Robert Jenrick's past, you might think that sending him in to tackle local government corruption sounds like it's straight from a Jerry Sadowitz comedy routine. But as Robert Jenrick is a practicing solicitor, I couldn't possibly comment. Just listen to episode 9 of the podcast. Not really news. But Winston Aubrey Aladar Marshall, banjo player in poor-faced Dust Bowl Trustafarian Wurzels Mumford & Sons, provoked an international Twitter backlash for one afternoon by coming out in support of a book by anti-Antifa contrarian Andy Ngo. Fans were shocked and appalled to discover the son of a multimillionaire hedge fund founder is a right-wing reactionary who thinks anti-fascism is more of a threat than fascism. As I said, not news. I just wanted an excuse to play some Mumford & Sons. But then I discovered that they didn't grow up in Depression-era America, playing string bass and banjo on a farm in Oklahoma, and that everything I thought I knew about them was a lie. So I decided to play this instead. This is CLTDRP, all caps. The opening track of their album announces that the band name is pronounced Clit Drip. Obvious, I guess. It's hardly going to be Clop Droop. Don't strike me as the type of band who'd name themselves after floppy breeches from the Renaissance period. They're another Brighton band. This track is from their debut album, Without the Eyes, which came out last year on Small Pond Records. This is I Don't Want to Go to the Gym.
My fingers at me like I draw the lines. I still don't mend my dignity and all my time. Maybe I don't wanna go to the gym. Guess what, Rick? I don't wanna get super thin. Maybe I'm dumb in the morning to shave my legs. And maybe I use feminism as a way to relate. Maybe I'll hate my tattoos in a couple of years.
I want you like 2001.
To Winston, Audrey, Aragorn, Marshall's huge relief, his book recommendations were quickly consigned to the shadowy realm of forgotten tweets, when the horrific murder of a woman by a man shocked the online community into outrage. Which one? Oh, the newsworthy one, obviously, the white middle-class photogenic marketing executive from London, the one with a prurient true crime angle, with a victim people feel they want to relate to. It's hardly going to be the murder of Samantha Heap, was it? Or Gatika Goyal, or Imogen Baharduke, or Wing Ching Zhu, all murdered by men in the UK in the first week of March this year. No, it was a newsworthy murder of Sarah Everard, who's alleged to have been kidnapped and killed by serving police officer Wayne Cousins. Though the Met were quick to point out, he was off duty at the time. I don't work in the media, so I don't feel qualified to comment on why Sarah Everard's murder was front page news, when the other 38 women murdered by men in the UK, so far this year, haven't made the national headlines. But it resonated with a lot of women whose own lived experience gives them a genuine fear of finding themselves in that same situation. Many clearly related their experience of sexual harassment in the street with Sarah Everard's kidnap and murder. Some called for a curfew for men. Some men thought it would be helpful to point out that not all men are murderers. And the hashtag not all men became the new all lives matter. Maybe not all women might have been a better hashtag, in recognition of the sickeningly high number of women who are murdered by men and die anonymous deaths without headlines, because the news media doesn't deem their deaths, and by extension their lives, to be worthy of note. I had a long, rambling monologue prepared for this, but then I remembered, this is a light entertainment show, so let's have a tune instead.
Not enough. your future so alien, your plan. Take all of this if you will, and I'll take what I can.
A town that is no more! My God, you say, what have I done? But you won't need what's gone before. What did you say? There is none. And so you drive the world to war, but this war will not be lost or won. The desolation that you've seen but never saw is a lesson that you think you'll never learn. Would you see the fire in the world where you exist? Would your hard eyes register the pain? Are you so cold that there is no distress? When the death will give death again? The flowers in your landscape, some withered rose, pick them on the corpses where they lay. Haunted, where all hope died, froze by the horror of your act, compelled to stay. What now? And the solace in your lusting after death, I determined that your darkness should be shared. Unnoticing your blindness, this miracle of breath, what element of beauty attracts it to desire? Would you see the burning? Is that your dear light? Would you feel my yearning? Peace, life, light, body, breath. Would you take all this? What now? Now you would destroy the earth. Drown the riverbed. What now? Now in your control, birth and death, drive the bodies incandescent in the heat.
What is it? So deprived, such a dream of your empty eyes head. Why must I share your lust of death? Will you not die alone? Why must I share your fear of breath, light, life, peace?
Crass, of course, with What the Fuck, from the Penis Envy album released in 1981. Or more specifically, from the Crassical Collection CD version of Penis Envy, because I'm still at that stage where I'm buying CDs of albums I already own on vinyl. Next step, buying vinyl box sets of those CDs. The serial bully Priti Patel was back in the news last week for all sorts of reasons. The important one was her announcement that she plans to reform the UK's asylum rules to make the system faster and fairer, and to better support the most vulnerable. Sounds good for those people who've abandoned everything to flee persecution in their home country. But under the new system, people who arrive in the UK from a safe country like France will sadly no longer have the same entitlements as those who arrive through so-called proper channels. She expressed concern, in words, about the safety of asylum seekers making dangerous channel crossings to reach the UK. And I'm sure, in a rush to protect these people, it escaped her notice that most people seeking asylum in Britain are from Iran, Iraq, Albania, Pakistan and Afghanistan, and enter the EU via Turkey or by crossing the Mediterranean, and that every single one of these people would, under Priti Patel's system, be compelled to claim asylum outside the UK, in Greece, Italy or Turkey. So her new plan will only offer a faster and fairer system to asylum-seeking families who reach the island of Great Britain by circumnavigating the Strait of Gibraltar and braving the perils of the North Atlantic in a pedalo thereby ensuring that they have followed what she calls a safe and legal route. Critics have said this contravenes our legal duties under the Refugee Convention. Even supporters have questioned what we do with asylum seekers arriving from France, as we have left the EU and we have no legal process by which to return them. In fact, we haven't returned a single irregular migrant to Europe since the end of the EU exit implementation period. And it's all thanks to those Brexiteers who've made it impossible to deport foreigners to the EU. I guess we'll have to throw them all back in the sea with all the rotting fish that we can't export anymore. But anyway, all of that was quickly forgotten when a more important story broke about eyebrows. Yes, eyebrows were raised in the press when details of Priti Patel's Home Office procurement card spending revealed £107,269.40 had been spent at SP Beautiful Brows and Lashes, and £5,425.90 at Primark. Her office was quick to clarify that the 70 grand bill was for an emergency purchase of hand sanitizer for Border Force staff at the start of the COVID lockdown, and that the Primark bill was for clothes for asylum seekers. But they failed to provide plausible explanations for the £900 she spent in a pub in Oxford, probably to source emergency pork scratchings for hungry refugees. Or the £669 on cupcakes, probably to feed homeless orphans she saw begging for scraps in the street as she was chauffeured to work. Or the £2,000 to a diet consultant, probably to help those same homeless orphans lose weight after she's been overfeeding them cupcakes. Because no one likes a fat orphan. But it was understandable she'd want to splash out on some cakes and a round of mojitos. She was probably celebrating the fact that she no longer has to give evidence at Sir Philip Rudnam's employment tribunal after the government used £340,000 of your money to reach a settlement with his solicitors, thus avoiding the embarrassment of the Home Secretary being questioned about breaching the ministerial code by bullying staff. £340,000 of taxpayers' money to avoid the inconvenience of an employment tribunal may seem like a lot of money. You might think, I could buy a nice house with that. Or feed Matt Hancock and his team for 8 months with delicious food from Bong Bong's Manila Canteen. But in the grand scheme of this government's profligate wastefulness, it's nothing. £340,000 is actually good value. It paid to cover up 7 months of bullying between the date Priti Patel became Home Secretary on the 24th of July 2019 and the date Sir Philip Rudnam resigned on the 29th of February 2020. Compared to the £37 billion we gave to Dido Harding, it's fucking peanuts. With £37 billion in a war chest to avoid public scrutiny of her behaviour, Priti Patel could have travelled back in time to the middle Paleolithic period, where she could have shouted at and belittled the earliest hunter-gatherers and subjected them to a vicious and orchestrated briefing campaign. And she'd still have enough of your cash to pay these prehistoric civil servants £500,000 a year in hush money for every year of her 63,000-year reign of terror. And there would still be enough money left over to get her eyebrows done and scoff a few cupcakes before she sees her dietitian. I want to stress that this is a thought experiment only. I'm not suggesting we send the Home Secretary back in time to terrorise our Stone Age Homo sapien ancestors. That would be an exercise fraught with danger. Not least risking what scientists call the Priti Patel paradox. That's when you travel back in time to the 1960s, become Home Secretary, and introduce strict immigration rules that prevent your own parents from entering the UK from Uganda. You're then born in Kampala instead of Hertfordshire, and you never play a role in British politics. And because of that, no one suggests sending you back in time, thereby creating the paradox. But unfortunately, this paradox did not happen, and she did not prevent her immigrant parents from coming over here and giving birth to Priti Patel. And consequently, she continues to exist in our timeline.
Thou hast no right but to do thy will. Do thy will, and all is lost thy name. Lord, have mercy.
command.
We could be telling on the la. Yes, we are spring and we are sure. Are we gonna la.
We together is monster.
Was Reducer from Brighton with Underby Sleng Teng Dub Attack, originally recorded in 1986. I had that on a shit quality 4th or 5th generation cassette since the late 80s and was pleased to discover it recently appeared on Bandcamp. I saw them live 3 times when I was a teenager. Very unusual band, full on Templar psychic youth in appearance and lyrical tropes. The first show I caught was a surround sound storm of noise lasting about an hour in the vein of early Boyd Rice. The second show, very much like the track I just played, and one of the best shows I've ever seen. That track, dedicated to my friend Matt Skinner, who lent me the original cassette. Anyway, tempting though it is to live in the past, when the present is such a shit show. The shit show must go on. That's almost it for episode 11, just time for one final correction. The Chinese word for crisis, Wei Qi, does consist of 2 syllables that are written with 2 separate characters, and the first character does mean danger, as JFK stated in his speech. However, the second syllable does not translate as opportunity. It means something like incipient moment, or crucial point, when things begin to change. That's it for episode 11. Join me next time on the 3rd of May for the final show before indoor hospitality opens, and you can go back to spending your Monday nights in the pub.